Welcome to Let's Talk Learning Disabilities with Lori Peterson and Abby Weinstein. Lori and Abby spend their days talking about dyslexia, dysgraphia, dyscalculia, and ADHD. They talk to parents of struggling students and adults who have had a lifetime of academic challenges. They want to share those stories along with their own insights with you. So, let's talk learning disabilities.
Hey everybody, welcome to Let's Talk Learning Disabilities. This is Lori.
And this is Abby.
And we are super excited today. We have Hannah Ross all the way from California. We feel so excited because this is somebody outside of the state of Texas. So you'll get to hear somebody from across the country talking to us about what she does. Hannah is an educational therapist. And this is something that I have heard about. Abby, have you heard of educational therapists?
I haven't. This is the first time I've heard of an educational therapist.
So I've heard of them, but I've always been very curious as to what they do. So Hannah and I have met already. And she shared some really fascinating stuff, and it was so fascinating. I thought it'd be fun to have her on today because I have a feeling that this is something that most people don't know a lot about. And I think what she does is pretty cool. So Hannah, welcome.
Hi, thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here and really get to spread the word about educational therapy outside of California into your audiences as well.
Awesome. Well, we're excited to have you. So I think if it's okay, let's just start with you telling us a little bit about you, how you kind of landed in educational therapy, and then what is an educational therapist?
Of course. So I started out as a classroom teacher. So I worked as a classroom teacher in California for about 4 to 5 years. I taught third grade and fourth grade. And I had originally thought that's where I would stay and, you know, what I would want to do for the rest of my career. But I kind of noticed as a classroom teacher that there were just many students in my classroom, even though I had a relatively small class size of 25 students, there was many students whose needs I just couldn't quite meet in the classroom setting. No matter how much I would differentiate or level, there was either some extra remediation they needed or some strategy building that just wasn't happening during the school day. And I was definitely plagued by that, just feeling like I couldn't meet all of the different learning needs as a classroom teacher, which kind of led me to think about what else is out there and where could I really fill in the gaps. So I kind of decided I love working one-on-one with students. I really, really enjoy that even more than I enjoyed classroom teaching. So I started just looking around and listening about what other options were out there. And this was about 5 years ago now. So I had just heard about educational therapy from another teacher I knew who had said she was going to an educational therapy program. And I think one of my students at the time also had an educational therapist. But once again, I heard educational therapy and I also had never heard of educational therapy because it is, while it's actually not new at all, it's been in California and actually throughout the country, but in lesser ways for quite a while. It's just not a commonly used term necessarily. So I also hadn't heard about it. So I kind of took a deep dive into what an educational therapist is, what that would look like, and what kind of training programs there were. So I'll get a little bit to exactly what an ed therapist is in just a moment. But in my research, I kind of found out there's a couple training programs all in California. And I decided to go back to school at UC Riverside for an educational therapy certificate program where I took classes all about learning differences, assessment, working with kids with a variety of challenges, how to read reports and create learning goals and plans accordingly.
Wow.
So that was really awesome. And that kind of allowed me to kind of move into the role of an educational therapist and begun working with students privately. So kind of to get into what an educational therapist is, really in the most simple way, I like to think about it kind of as a learning coach who works with students, parents, and teachers and kind of helps the whole team come together on some specific learning goals and strategies. So educational therapists have specific training to support students with learning differences, and they usually possess specific knowledge about working with students with a wide variety of challenges like dyslexia, dysgraphia, ADHD, autism spectrum disorder, processing deficits, executive function challenges, and much, much more. So in our training, we kind of work in all of those areas and learn how to really work with students who are different types of learners with different strengths and challenges. And we really learn how to give tools and strategies to support those learners. So in addition to like doing the traditional academic skills of reading, writing, math, there's also an underlying work on strengthening processing skills, memory, attention, and focus, along with working on some of those more traditional academic skills, really.
That's great.
In California, are educational therapists ever employed by school districts? Like, can you get a job with a district, or is this strictly private stuff?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'd say definitely at private schools in California, educational therapists will oftentimes be on staff to run their learning services, like kind of the private school version of special ed. And sometimes they'll work at public schools as well in the special ed setting. But that will oftentimes look more like a traditional teacher rather than a one-on-one educational therapist. And I should say another question I get all the time, and I think it's worth mentioning, is what's the difference between educational therapists and tutors? Because I think
that was going to be my next question.
Yeah, well, I got ahead of you there. But it's something I've always asked. And I think tutors are obviously fantastic and fantastic support for many students. But generally speaking, educational therapists will have kind of more than just a specific subject area knowledge. A lot of times tutors might be really well trained in one grade level or subject and will really remediate that area, where educational therapists are kind of working sometimes to remediate an area, but also to provide some tools and strategies for just how to be an overall better learner, to kind of help students like kind of move beyond and become lifelong learners who can do so independently. And educational therapists also have a lot of that specialized training within certain niche areas as well. And really, we do a lot of work working collaboratively with schools and parents to kind of make sure everyone's on the same page, which is another kind of thing that really sets ed therapists and tutors apart.
That is so interesting, because I feel like you're kind of a combination of like a dyslexia therapist, an ADHD coach, a tutor. Like, I think you encompass all of those things. I love that. Abby, did you have a question?
Well, I was going to ask about, so when you're working with a student privately, you're their you're their educational therapist, but you're also working with the family. So you're helping teach the families different strategies they can implement at home to support those lifelong learning goals and those learning skills for the learner?
Yeah, certainly. And I think that's definitely when educational therapy is its most effective, when a whole team can work together, and the school, the teachers, the parents, myself are all working towards the same goals, whether it's reading remediation or focusing strategies or organization. When everyone's using the same tools and using the same language to work with students, that's certainly when it's the best for students' growth and development.
Mm-hmm. So are all educational therapists trained, and I want you to talk a little bit more about this, because you said like you specialize in, like, you can work with kids with dyslexia, and I know you and I had talked a little bit about what that looks like. Are all ed therapists trained in those same kinds of programs?
That's a really great question. And yes and no. I think a lot of educational therapists have further training, including myself. And I think maybe that's also just something about being in the education profession. We just want to keep learning, and there always feels like there's so much more to learn. There's a million different professional developments. I'm like, oh, I need to learn more about this and that, which I really do love about this field, is we're all trying to better ourselves. But oftentimes, educational therapists will really specialize in one area. So I definitely specialize and really enjoy most working with students with dyslexia. So I've got further training in that area. So I have Orton-Gillingham training as well to work with students with dyslexia. Not all educational therapists will have that, but many do. That would be an important thing to ask when working with an ed therapist, to see if they kind of specialize in the area you're looking for. Other ed therapists will really specialize in ADHD coaching and executive function support, and might have some extra training in those areas. So a lot of times people will sort of work in a specific niche area with kind of expertise working with a certain profile of student.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. So when you get a student, or, you know, when someone hires you, how do you determine where to start?
Great question. And a lot of times it's thanks to the work of people like you. A lot of times my students come to me with a diagnostic report. They've either just seen an educational diagnostician or a neuropsychologist, and they have some information about the learning profile. And the parents really just want to figure out what to do next. They have all this fantastic information, whether it's a diagnosis or just ideas about a student's specific strengths or weaknesses, but they don't really know where to go from there. So a lot of times I will use those reports. Those will kind of give me a good idea about kind of what's been going on with the student and what some of their underlying issues might be. Along with that, I, of course, talk with parents and teachers. And I do a few informal assessments with students as well to kind of really gauge where their levels are. And what would be their specific needs to focus on first. Using all that information, I'll create between 3 to 5 specific learning goals that will be like the anchor for all of our sessions, whether it's a goal in decoding, spelling, and reading stamina, perhaps for a student with dyslexia. And really every session is kind of working towards reaching those goals. And those goals too are always editable as students progress and new challenges come up. We can kind of tweak them and figure out really what's the best way to meet student needs. Now, I should say, though, not every student I work with comes with an eval, and I certainly see students who don't actually have a diagnosis but are just struggling for one reason or another. So for students who don't have that report, I'll do a little bit more testing in the beginning and spend a little more time kind of checking out different areas of strength and weakness before making up those goals.
Abby, can you think, I was just going to say really quick, I mean, think about all the kiddos that we have that are ADHD, but struggle in math. Need that math tutor, but they also need the executive functioning or ADHD and reading comprehension or reading, you know, study skills. And I feel like we're always sending them to 2 or 3 different people where this is like a one-stop shop.
That's what I was thinking. It sounds fabulous because there's so many students. I mean, even just a student that I was thinking of today and working with that has a few different learning disabilities in addition to ADHD. So they struggle with, they have gaps and need remediation, but also need learning strategies help and study skills help and some executive functioning skills help. So it would be beautiful to have that student work with you and have that one-stop shop and, you know, just be able to help them with all of their skills and help the parents, because we oftentimes hear the parents saying, so what can I do at home to help my student? And so I feel like you would be a great resource for parents as well, you know, to help with their challenges in working with their kids on homework and study skills, time management, organization, and all of their academic goals.
Oh, for sure. And as you know, and you mentioned, there's never just a clear cut student. There's so often and not, it's dyslexia along with ADHD or a processing challenge. And so oftentimes students are super complex. So there's not just one set curriculum that's going to work, which is what I really love about my job, is that I can really look at the student as an individual and kind of piece together how we can work on more than one thing at a time, while also keeping them engaged in the learning process and trying to like bring some joy and confidence back into learning. Because I know so many of the students we see just honestly are having a rough time in the school settings and really oftentimes have a low self-esteem about their learning and their skills, and really kind of need a reset on how they think about themselves as learners and really the learning process.
That's so true. That's so crucial, because a lot of struggling learners have lost their confidence. They lack confidence in their own abilities, even the abilities they do have that they don't struggle with. And it affects their self-esteem and it affects their love of learning and wanting to go to school. And so they're struggling with their attitude towards school and being engaged and being, you know, initiating the tasks that they need to initiate at school. But I was going to ask a question back to how you assess when you get a client that doesn't come with a report, a diagnostic report, and you do some assessment to try to determine what their levels are, what skills to work on. You're doing academic type skills assessments. What other types of assessments are you doing, or what other skills are you assessing to see if they have it in order to meet their needs?
Definitely. And I'd say the other skills we're really looking at besides that, the core, like what's the reading level? What does their writing look like? What is their math skill level? Is kind of the underlying learning skills of memory, attention, focus, task initiation, all those things you've mentioned, direction following, Those types of things, which honestly, those are super fun to assess, especially for younger students, because there's so many different fun games that you can use. A student doesn't even really realize that this is technically an assessment I'm doing, but even a simple board game that's novel to a student as they learn the directions and apply some problem solving to it, it can be pretty clear to see which skills are challenging for a student. Sometimes a student will struggle to follow auditory directions or to kind of remember the steps needed to solve a puzzle. Some students will become really easily frustrated at tasks that are new. So I actually love to use games and problem solving activities to assess some of those learning skills that students need in the classroom, because I also think that makes it a little more fun and students don't always realize I'm checking how good at direction following are you. So kind of look at those different things, processing, memory, attention to detail, just like their attitude about persevering for challenging things.
Yeah, that sounds awesome.
Do you work on some self-advocacy skills, like how to advocate, you know, for their needs in the classroom?
Oh, definitely. And I think self-advocacy, I think, is a huge goal and like kind of the end goal a lot of times in the educational therapy process, because really we want students to be able to understand themselves as learners and understand what their strengths are and what their challenges are. Every one of us has certain strengths, but we also have things that are really hard for us that we manage to compensate for and get through life. So learners are the same. So I really work with students in kind of understanding what they need and what works best for them, whether that's they really need a quiet place to take their test, or they really need their teacher to give them a copy of their notes, or perhaps they don't want to be called on to read aloud in front of the class without being warned. Students kind of, we do a lot of work reflecting on what makes them feel good in school and what is more challenging, and kind of just playing with what works and doesn't. And then especially for younger students, it can often feel very scary to ask for what you need. So I help parents, or I will help parents by emailing teachers and saying, okay, with so-and-so, here's some things to keep in mind while working with them. This is going to help them. Let's try to avoid that, this kind of language. So I'll kind of, after that conversation, advocate to the teachers to make it a little more clear what's going to best help the student. But for older students, middle school and above, it's a really great thing for them to learn how to email their teachers and ask for help or tell them something that will be beneficial to them as a learner. So I do a lot of work with students emailing their teachers and kind of requesting what they need and explaining some of their challenges. I find this is a lot easier for students than asking for help in person, because a lot of students are afraid to walk up to a teacher when their classmates are around. So that's certainly a big goal, is students recognizing what they need and knowing it's okay to ask for it. So many of my kids say, oh, I don't want to bug my teacher, or my teacher is going to think it's so weird that I email them. But I always explain, 99.9% of the time, a teacher is going to be so impressed if a student reaches out and advocates for themselves and asks for what they need. Mm-hmm. And it's such a valuable skill, even as learners move into high school and college, where they have to be a lot more independent. And even into the work world, being able to advocate for yourself really is such an important lifelong skill. So that's certainly an ultimate goal of the process.
I think too, you know, once you send that email and ask, you know, let your teacher know that, hey, I need XYZ. And then when you actually get it, it's like, wow, that worked. Mm-hmm. And that was so easy.
You know?
So then that is just kind of like the gateway into, you know, now I can ask for help. Now I'm comfortable with it. My teacher understands. They get me. They, you know, yes, I love that.
Right. Exactly. And I could be more successful.
Exactly. And I know from being a classroom teacher, and I have so much respect for teachers, it is the hardest job out there. So many needs to meet. I have so much respect. But as a teacher, I know from experience, I would sometimes forget I would have an accommodation or something I was supposed to do for a student. Sure. And it would slip my mind and I would completely forget. So I also tell my students, like, hey, your teachers might forget. It's okay for you to say, hey, is it okay if I use my multiplication chart for this assignment, if that is an accommodation you have in place? It's okay to go up and remind teachers. They're not trying to forget. They just have a million things going on.
Right.
Yeah, I love that. I love that.
So you mentioned a lot of different ages. You talked about when you're working with younger students versus older elementary versus middle school and college kids. So do educational therapists work with all ages, and how old can you be? How young can you be to benefit from educational therapy? How old? What are the ages that you work with?
Yeah, really, I would say overall educational therapists work with absolutely all ages, from I'd say 3 years old to adult even. Of course, the focus could be very different for that, but an educational therapist can really provide strategies for learning across the board. One of my specialties is working with elementary. So I do a lot of work with elementary, but I also love to have like a middle school and high school student as well, just because it helps give me a wider spectrum of just seeing, okay, this is what's going to be happening in middle school. This is what's happening in high school, just to kind of always remind me about what's the pathway for success and kind of keep my foot in all areas. I think that's helpful for any of our learners. While I specialize in younger students, I love to see some older students as well. And I have some ed therapists who work with me who do a lot of work with high schoolers and even college students. Sometimes adults will call asking for educational therapy as well. That'll oftentimes look a little bit more like executive function coaching, where it's working to develop strategies for organization, managing time, completing long-term projects like that. But those are oftentimes the skills we're working with high school and college students with it. So it certainly can fit.
Well, and we have adults that we diagnose with dyslexia for the very first time as an adult. So they would actually really benefit from like the Orton-Gillingham program, in addition to obviously probably the time management and all that good stuff. But they actually really need that. And so to know that you're available for that too, that's huge, because it's hard to find services for adults.
Definitely.
Absolutely it is. And, you know, even I'm thinking of a lot of high schoolers that are just transitioning to college for the first time. That's a big, huge change and a leap from being a high schooler, being at home with your parents, having the structure, the support in place, and being a freshman in college, especially if you're away from home, living away from home, and being a struggling learner. So I'm thinking of already so many different clients and students that I know that could really benefit from educational therapy.
Yeah, for
Definitely.
Sure. Do you provide all of your services virtually?
Yes. Yeah, so I do kind of a mix. Of course, I do in office sessions in the Los Angeles area, but thanks to COVID, I mean, this is definitely the silver lining. It's really opened up the world of virtual work. So now myself and the other ed therapists on my team see students around the world and around the country virtually, which works out really well. Most of the time, I think some students really tend to do very well focusing on that one-on-one in the virtual environment. And for those students who it works for, it's so convenient and really avoids all the traffic and scheduling issues that driving around for in-person sessions involves.
Do you run into an issue with materials as far as, you know, how you get the materials to the client?
Yeah, depending on the age, we definitely try to work around that. Like if we have a student, let's say it's a student with dyslexia, then we'll probably send them some hands-on manipulatives to use in the sessions, as well as like a whiteboard marker, paper. If there's an older student where we're reading a novel together, we'll send the copy of the book so they can kind of have that to do. Sometimes parents will print out things we need. So we kind of make it work. We've even done things like for our students with handwriting challenges, having actually a dot cam where you can see the writing in place as well. So I really try to look at each student as an individual. I have no like clear cut rule for each student, but as needs come up, we try to really figure out how to engage students online in a little different way while still providing the resources that we would provide in an in-person session. It's always a fun challenge.
Do you find that parents, especially mostly, I guess, really of your public school kids, rely on you for any of like, do you feel like you sometimes need to be kept up to date on like the legal guidelines for special education in 504? Do they ever come to you kind of more as like wanting an advocate role? Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. Some educational therapists will really focus on those areas of kind of working working within the special education system. And while I personally, I do attend IEP and 504 meetings and will help suggest learning goals and accommodations for students, I generally won't work as the advocate for a family just because that's not my area of expertise. But I do know amazing people who do that. And I know that is such a need as well, helping parents mm-hmm. ask for what they need. So I oftentimes will provide suggestions, but I won't necessarily take on that exact role.
You know, what's interesting too is that by you attending those meetings, what we have found is that just by being the person that's there that can look at the parent and say, well, what the school is really trying to tell you is this, and looking at the school and saying, here's what the parent's real concern is, kind of being almost that
mediator,
you almost then don't need an advocate anymore. The risk of a conflict happening is much less when you've got someone there, because I think the parents feel so overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. The teachers feel overworked. The parents are trying to ask for something. The teachers are put up a wall. It just becomes such a, what's the word I'm looking for? It's just, I don't know, confrontational.
Definitely. Definitely. Yeah,
by you being there, I do think it reduces the need for that needing an advocate.
I hope so. Yeah. And I really, honestly, I think the best situation is when I can work closely with teachers. There's teachers I email on a daily basis. And they're so wonderful to work with because, I mean, especially since I was a classroom teacher, I understand the work they're doing. And I really want to be able to piggyback on that and support the work that's happening in the classrooms that the teachers are doing so the student can be most successful. And that really tends to be what works best.
Mm-hmm. How often a week, how many sessions? Like, is it like usually one time a week? It just depends on the child or student?
It depends completely on the student. For a student with dyslexia, let's say they're diagnosed and are a couple grade levels behind in their reading, that's like an everyday student would be ideal. So some students I'll see 5 days a week. Other students who are in need of more executive function support or are not quite as affected by their learning differences, I'll see once a week. But usually even for my once a week students, especially if they're older, we'll kind of check in with them, send a text or email just to make sure they followed through, that things are going well. So once we see them once a week, we haven't missed a bunch of important things.
That's awesome.
And once they master the goals that you've kind of outlined for them, do you reassess and look to see if there's other goals, or do they just master the goals that they've been determined they need and they graduate from working with you? Or is it a constant revision, reassess, relook at what goals are? And how long typically do the students work with you?
Yeah, that's definitely one of the most common questions I get. And it's so different on a case-by-case basis. Well, the goal of educational therapy is definitely to not need educational therapy. And we definitely want to, my goal is to create confident, lifelong learners who can do their learning on their own competently and independently. So certainly the goal is to move students out from needing support. And sometimes that can happen quickly. And sometimes that takes a lot longer, really just depending on what the needs are and even what the academic fit is. At times we'll work with students who their learning profile just really doesn't fit the schools they're going to, which can make the process a lot more challenging because there's a lot more skill building and strategies to teach. Other times a student will be in a pretty good fit learning environment. And after they kind of learn a few tools for how to support their learning processes, the tools for executive function, for planning, for managing time, for how to best study. And when students are motivated to learn those things and apply them on their own, oftentimes they're good and they're good to move on into the world independently. So I would say it could be anywhere from 3 months to three years. And a lot of times I'm constantly assessing what the goals are and what needs to change. And a lot of times a student will reach a goal, but then it's a new year and there's a new area of challenge. Mm-hmm. And as you know from diagnosing students, a lot of times when there is a learning difference diagnosed, it's not like there's a quick fix or a cure. In fact, that's just a part of who the learner is. And it comes with lots of challenges, but also lots of wonderful strengths. Mm-hmm. So different students can need really that different support as they move up in grades. The support they might need will look different. But certainly we want to get students learning independently, self-advocating independently, so they can really move forward with the process. We never want to keep students in educational therapy if they don't really need it.
So, you know, here's what I love about you is that I kind of feel like you're, Abby and I are very similar in that we started in the classroom. We saw a need. We saw like there's just something we want to know more. We want to help these kids that are struggling. And so we, you know, we moved on and ended up where we are today. And I think that's what I find so endearing and so amazing about the services that you provide, because you've seen what this looks like in the classroom. You know what the struggling learner looks like, and you know the challenges that the teachers face to meet those needs. And so you have that firsthand experience. And I think that is invaluable, because I think if you don't ever have that experience of seeing that child struggle in a room of 18, 20, 30 kids, then I don't think you have all the information, right? So I love that you have that. And I love your passion for helping these kids. And I love that you have such a wide variety of kids that you can serve.
Right.
Which I think is phenomenal. So thank you.
And a wide variety of skills that you can address and help with. I think that's amazing. I mean, I want an educational therapist.
I know, me too.
I want every student I know to have an educational therapist.
Right. I love the idea of being able to have like a one-stop shop, and that's just not something we have experienced yet. So this is huge for us, and it's huge for our clients,
right,
and our listeners, because now they know how they can find this kind of service. So how do people find you, Hannah?
Yes, of course. Well, you can find me in a variety of ways. You can find me at my website at hannahross.me. My email is also hannahross.edtherapy@gmail.com. And I will be kind of rebranding my practice shortly. So it's going to change to Summit Learning soon. So watch out for that. I'll still be reachable at those places as well. I also have an Instagram where I'll share work I do, and I like to post a lot of games I do with students. It's at Hannah at H Ross Ed Therapy. So those are all great ways to find me. And I really do just appreciate the work you're doing, and I love talking to people from different parts of the country who are also working to serve the same populations. And I'm so excited to help get the word about educational therapy out to families and teachers. I'm so glad I personally went into the field. It's so rewarding. I absolutely love getting to bring the joy back into learning and help students raise their self-esteem. So I love talking to families who are just looking to figure out what's the next step. And also I love talking to teachers who are interested in getting to educational therapy themselves and are kind of curious about what the field's like. So never hesitate to reach out. I'm happy to have the joy of spreading the word.
Oh, well, thank you. So if parents are looking for an educational therapist in their neighborhood, they obviously could just look up for educational therapy. Is it called anything different anywhere else? Like our job sometimes in other states are called other things. So is there anything else they need to be looking for?
Yes. One place they could look is at the Association of Educational Therapists website. It's aet.org. And if you look on that website, aetonline.org, actually, there is an option to search for an educational therapist. So that's worth a try if you're looking for someone in your area. But like we've talked about, it's not as widely used of a term in other areas at this point, unfortunately. Hopefully we can help grow it. So you can also look for terms like a learning specialist. I can't say what the exact training would be, but I would say looking for a learning specialist, but also seeing if that educator specializes in the area that your student needs help in. Like if you're looking for support primarily in dyslexia, making sure someone is Orton-Gillingham trained or trained in a specific dyslexia remediation program. Or if a student is struggling with ADHD, making sure you are working with a professional who is really, really knowledgeable about that area and helping develop the executive function skills and supports with it.
That's awesome. Good. And I will put all those links in our show notes to your website, to the Educational Therapy Association website, so people can have access to that very easy. Thank you so much for being here today. This has been awesome. And I love to hear about everything that you're doing. And I think that this is excellent information.
I agree. It's so exciting. I'm just so excited to hear all about educational therapy and everything you do, Hannah. And I appreciate you sharing that. And I can tell you're passionate about what you do. And I love that.
Oh, thank
you. We love
you.
People that are passionate about helping students and individuals succeed and be more independent. I love that.
That's what it's all about, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, thank you. And thank you for the work you do as well.
Well, thank you. Guys, thank you so much for joining us today. Hopefully you got as much out of this as Abby and I did. Look at our show notes if you want to get any more information about Hannah and what she does, or if you'd like to reach her. Abby, we didn't even talk about, this is number 22.
Episode 22?
It's episode 22. Ooh. Every time we say that now, it just blows my mind. So I'm like, how did we get into the 20s? We're growing up. I'm so proud.
We are growing up.
All right. Well, I hope everyone felt. Exactly. I hope everyone has a great day. We'll see you guys back here for episode number 23. Thanks so much for joining us. Let's talk learning disabilities.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for joining us today. In our show notes, you can find information about today's talk, as well as links to resources and other episodes. If you have questions about today's talk, have ideas for future episodes, or just want to stay connected, you can contact us through Diagnostic Learning Services on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Instagram. So, let's keep talking learning disabilities. This podcast is sponsored by eDiagnostic Learning. You can find more information at www.ediagnosticlearning.com.